afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to Information Week Live for the week of July 10th, 2016. I'm Kurt Franklin, Executive Editor at Information Week, and your host for this episode of Information Week Live. We've got a great episode. Now, if you were with us last week, you know that it was The Kurt Show, and that's really fascinating, I'm sure. But, you know, I think it's a much better program every week if we can have more of my colleagues join us, and that's exactly what's happening today. First up, we have Dark Reading Senior Editor Sarah Peters. Always happy to have you with us, Sarah.
Thank you, Kurt. I'm always happy to be here.
We also have the inimitable Charlie Babcock, Information Week Editor at Large. Charlie, welcome to Information Week Live.
Greetings, Kurt. Good to talk to you again.
Now, we want to dive in this week because there was a gathering down in Silicon Valley this week. And, Charlie, I know you took a quick run down there to hear the messages Amazon was sending to the AWS faithful. Can you tell us what was going on down there?
Well, Amazon has held a series of what it calls summits around the country this year. It's the first time it's done quite such an extensive outreach. And they had 8,000 people show up at the Santa Clara Convention Center to hear the latest on cloud services and see what emphasis Amazon is putting on what it's planning next. The key speaker was Matt Wood, General Manager of Product Strategy, and I find him interesting, even though Andy Jassy normally kind of carries the podium. Matt comes out of the deep numbers and scientific side of Amazon and came up with or was instrumental in coming up with some of the IT-related services that Amazon now has been introducing on kind of a regular basis. So to get a chance to hear Matt, well, he talked for about 90 minutes, which is, he said afterward, a very long time for him. Public speaking is not his first choice of what to do for the day. And it was a good talk. Mainly, he emphasized that the database service that Amazon introduced back in 2015, Aurora, a relational system. It's based on MySQL, but it's MySQL on steroids in the cloud, can do much bigger tasks than MySQL standalone and the data center can do. Is now, Aurora is Amazon's fastest growing service ever. And that would include the ramp up of S3 and other basic services in Amazon's history. So there's quite a bit of acceptance for database as a service now. And Amazon is feeding that by making it easier to migrate your database system in the data center onto the AWS cloud. It's launched database migration service. That occurred at reInvent of 2014, I believe, and it is catching on. It was perhaps slow to ramp up, but they added some services to database migration service like schema conversion service. And that caught people's attention, and that made it easier to move from your own database system in the data center onto the cloud. So initially, there were only a few things that you could migrate from and to. Of the proprietary databases, you could migrate a Oracle database or a SQL Server database, or some of the open source databases that you had in your data center, like MySQL, or possibly the high-performance MariaDB, onto the Amazon cloud. And you could migrate into the same system there, or you could migrate into a new new system thanks to that schema conversion service. And so suddenly Oracle and Microsoft customers had an option not only of getting to the cloud, but of moving off their existing database system. Matt Wood says about a third end up not only migrating to the cloud, but migrating to a alternative to their proprietary database. I don't know that that number is a good number. I don't believe everything people tell me, but I did see an example of a chip maker, XR, that wished to migrate to the cloud, and they made use of database migration service, although I believe they went from Oracle to a upgraded Oracle system in the cloud. So not everybody's migrating off. That said, Amazon added a new proprietary system that you can migrate into the cloud or migrate away from in the cloud, and that's the former Sybase systems, now known as SAP Adaptive Server Enterprise. And the schema conversion and the migration service will now apply to that, adding a third major commercial system that Amazon is trying to attract to EC2.
Charlie, I want to break in for a second because I'm curious. With all of the things that you're talking about, one of the advantages of actually going to an event is that you can kind of read the crowd. And you talked about the fact that Amazon is doing these events around the country rather than just the one big annual event. Do you get the sense when you talk to both the Amazon people and the customers that they are trying hard to manage the growth to be able to talk to all of the people who are joining the ecosystem? Or is it a case of them feeling like they have to work a little harder because the competition is stronger? Which side would you say we were closer to seeing at this event?
There's just a lot of interest in making the cloud part of your data center operation, adding cloud operations to the data center. Most people are thinking in terms of a very partial migration of something or other, a few workloads, a trial database system. But there's tremendous interest, and it's going to lead to, if one thing succeeds, it's going to lead to another, in my opinion, because a big operator of infrastructure can do it more efficiently than they can do it themselves in an isolated enterprise data center. So as long as Amazon keeps its pricing attitude, I talked to one user who said they'd been an S3 user from the start. Amazon brought out lower cost Glacier storage. They wanted to take advantage of that lower cost, but every time they set about planning and anticipating the trouble of doing it, Amazon lowered the price of S3 again. And it simply took away their motivation to change to an obvious cheaper service. They still have it on the planning agenda, but they haven't done it. I found that testimony a little hard to believe, and then you look around and you see everybody kind of, gee, what's next? What else can I do? They're looking toward the next thing.
All right. Well, very good. It sounds like there were some interesting things going on down there and some interesting mentions. We're going to come back and talk to you more about that, but I want to take a moment to go over and talk with Sarah for a moment, because Sarah, speaking of the next big thing, I know that Dark Reading reported this week on a survey going out regarding Black Hat and its attendees. Can you tell us about what was on this survey and what it told you?
Sure. Yeah, we've
we did the survey last year as well. It's a survey just of the Black Hat attendees, kind of on their feelings on the industry, also on how they're spending their time and their money, what they're concerned about, how they like their jobs and what their staffing is like, a whole bunch of stuff. And one of the things that I think was pretty interesting was that 40% of them expect to be hit by a major data breach within the next year. 15% said they had no doubt it was going to happen. And if you expand it to at least saying it was somewhat likely, 72% of them said it was at least somewhat likely they would be hit by a major data breach. And these are Black Hat attendees, right? So these are some of the, these aren't just any, you know, just anybody. These aren't just general IT people. These are some of your most sophisticated security people. Most of them have the CISSP certification. When we pressed them a little bit more to respond to it, they were the kind of matter of fact about it. Honestly, one of them is just like, well, that's just the reality of the job. One of them said it's always a possibility. Our employees are very bright and talented, but they have their project goals. They have their timelines, and they just think that the risk has got to be acceptable. So go ahead, open that port. What could happen? That kind of thing. So that was one of the more important findings of the survey this year.
Now, let me get this clear. They thought not just that there would be a breach, but a major breach,
a major data breach within the next year. Yes.
So I'm just flabbergasted by that. I have to admit,
yes.
Because there's a part of me that goes, well, gee, why do you keep coming to work every morning? Because it's kind of like being the engineer on a train and filling out a survey and says, yes, at some point during the next year, my train's going to fall off the track, roll off the edge of a bridge and crash into a giant chasm somewhere, blowing up in a huge fireball. But by golly, I'm going to keep hanging on as the engineer until that happens. Do you think that's the attitude?
Go ahead.
Do you think that's the attitude?
Love their jobs. Because I asked them that too. They are not interested in leaving. That was another question we asked. Only 10%. Let me find the exact number. I think it was something like only 10% were. I'm sorry, 11%. Only 11% of respondents are actively looking for new jobs, and 32% said, I really love my job and my employer, and it would take a lot to get me to move. That was up from 24% last year. So they're even happier this year than they were last year, significantly happier. And when I pressed them again and asked for more extra comments, they were saying things like, I love my job. Some of them added profanities to emphasize that they really loved their job, but, you know, replace the word really with things I can't say on air.
Charlie,
yeah, they
you,
love it. I mean, they just love it.
I was going to say, Charlie, you've been covering the industry for a long, long time, and you've been covering different aspects of the industry. Can you think of another area within the IT industry where the respondents both say disaster is just around the corner and I really can't wait to come into work every day?
Well, Kurt, I wish you wouldn't say a long, long time. One long would be enough. But
noted.
Anyway, I cannot. You know, if the cloud service providers were to stand up and say, we feel we have a 44% of a complete shutdown sometime in the coming year. a lot of their customers would start moving away from them. It's just not a statistic that can be entertained as routine. So that is a little stunning, hard to digest.
Well,
now I should go ahead, Kurt.
No, I was going to ask you and say, was there anything within the survey, or is there anything based on your knowledge of the people in the industry that can explain this apparent contradiction?
Well, I do think there's, I think that a lot of the people in security just like the challenge of fighting the bad guy. I do think that there is that, and I think that that's a really great that's one of the really great things about them, and also that there are some security jobs as well that have the that are on the other side, the people who are doing some of the red teaming things. And I think it has helped that people up top, people in the boardroom, have begun to support them. I mean, you go back 10 years, and it was a much more frustrating job because they couldn't get anybody to take them seriously. They couldn't get anybody to listen to them. They couldn't get anywhere near that C-suite, even though there were a couple people with that title, Chief Information Security Officer. The letter, that chief title wasn't really, you were chief in name only. You weren't really a chief of anything. That's changed a lot over time. Now security has become a mainstream enough topic that they can get more support. It is still, they're still very understaffed, and they still don't have as much control over their budgets. We did find that as well, that their top concerns are social engineering and targeted attacks, but the most of their time and money go to fixing vulnerabilities in internally developed applications, managing risk and measuring risk and managing compliance. So they're not exactly having everything that they want, but there's marked improvements over time. I will say, though, that the other thing that we did this week was we had a radio show about women in security, and that we continue to have this major shortage. And the statistic that gets quoted a lot is the one that comes out from ISC Squared, which is the organization that gives out the CISSP certification, which is kind of the most well-known security certification. And their latest figures, which I think were released in September most recently, say that only 10% of the CISSPs out there, the security professionals, are women. And this is not improved over time. And there have been a lot of women over the years who have entered the field and then left it. So we do still have people entering this field who are not so happy there and are leaving it. So while there's a lot of people there who are happy, there's definitely a significant problem with the people who are not liking the industry so much either. And there's highs and lows happening right now.
Very good. Well, it sounds like this is going to be a fertile year for looking at trends and talking to people at Black Hat. And I know that you and the rest of the crew are going to be there in just a couple of weeks. So we will have to continue to follow this and look forward to you reporting a bit from Black Hat. I know that there are also going to be some dark reading radio shows out around Black Hat. I'm working to produce some of those. So we appreciate this and look forward to learning even more as we get a little bit closer.
Looking forward to it myself.
All right. Well, now, Charlie, I want to come back to you because before the show, we were talking about the stories that were big, and you mentioned something about DigitalOcean and a new service, and we're, as you say, the popularity of database as a service seems to be continuing. What can you tell us about DigitalOcean?
Well, they're an outfit that began in New York and has been more widely accepted on the East Coast. They've since expanded to other regions, but their customer base is still very New York, New Jersey, Virginia, Florida type of orientation. They're very programmer oriented, and they specialize in quick, simple provisioning of a virtual server. If you sign up with DigitalOcean, you need a server. They claim they'll spin it up and have it ready for you based on your selections in 55 seconds or less. And that's very fast. They probably have some tricks up their sleeves. I suspect they make good use of containers more so than better established vendors who don't feel they can quite rely on that technology. But at any rate, part of their reputation for that kind of speed was based on the fact that they told you what kind of server you were going to get and you were stuck with it. They call it a droplet. You select the CPU size, you're assigned memory and storage. That's that. Spin it up, you're in business. And that's good for the single programmer. But they have been getting more and more teams coming to them saying, gee, we'd like a team account, not an individual account. Can you do that? And then once they started doing that, the droplets storage began to be completely inadequate. The only way a programmer team could get more storage was to provision more droplets. And maybe they only wanted the storage, not the multiple CPUs. So they created a service, block storage. It's off the instance server. It's separate from where the instance resides in the DigitalOcean data center, and it can be whatever amount is needed by a project or by a team. And this is, it's something that Amazon started out with. S3 was a separate service. It wasn't an automatic assignment. It was something the customer could decide upon and expand or contract as they saw fit. But DigitalOcean didn't start that way. It's needed to mature. It's needed to add this additional storage service. But they base it on solid-state disk the same way that they do their instance memory and storage on the cloud server. So it's high-speed off-server storage, permanent, block-oriented, good for IOs, but still SSD-based, which gives it certain high-speed characteristics. So I thought that was kind of an interesting move, maybe a little overdue on their part, but they did it.
Most interesting, most interesting. And the thing that surprised me in what you just said was the indication that there are companies that still don't feel that containers are fully up to their standards. You know, whether it's from security or a resilience or reliability standpoint, that containers are still looked upon with some trepidation. Do you think that that's a widespread feeling out there in the industry?
All I know is I think containers within the enterprise can be managed quite sensibly and securely. When you get to the multi-tenant cloud, that's a little different story. You're mixing all kinds of customers and workloads. Containers are adequate to the task, but we don't know everything we would like to know. They have found a few vulnerabilities in containers and previous generation. They've been closed down, but a container used to be assembled on the fly, and you would go out to a Linux distributor and grab a copy of Linux for your container, download it, and then you'd add the next element and the next element, a web server, access to a database service, whatever. What if somebody is spoofing one of those distributors successfully and they plant a bad copy of Linux in your container, and you put that copy in amongst other customers' containers in the same, in effect, shared memory? The boundaries are not as firm with containers as they are with virtual machines. Amazon, Google, and IBM, Microsoft, they still rely on the virtual machine as the assured boundary between customers on a multi-tenant server. That's still the way it is. I think that will go away someday, but I'm not going to predict when. I'm not even sure I want to recommend that it go away anytime soon.
Well, it sounds like the sort of thing that's going to give you plenty to write about for a long time to come, and that's its own positive thing.
Right.
Sarah, I want to quickly ask you, we're getting close to the end of our time, but on this whole notion of containers and cloud services, do you get the feeling when you talk to people in the security realm that the industry is still struggling to get its arms around cloud security, or is cloud security now something that everyone understands, and so their nightmares have moved on to other topics?
That's interesting, because that's a question that I started asking people. I guess at the RSA conference earlier this winter, and it seems that it's started to now shift, that there are people who in the security industry who are believing that it's secure, but yet this perception has gotten past the security people who were the initial ones who were afraid of it, but that perception got to people outside of security, and now the security people are having to convince these other people that it's okay. So it's kind of made a weird, I guess people outside of security are not entirely trusting their security people's opinions on the cloud. So I don't really know exactly how to answer your question. I think that depending on your organization, you might have a no problem at all selling the idea, and in other places you might still have a really hard time. I can say that a lot of cloud vendors have done a great job of getting their services to the point where they really are able to handle even really regulated industries, and that's a new thing, but you're getting there now. I think that there's definitely places where still the right choice is to keep at least some of your stuff on-prem, but what cloud vendors have done just over in the very recent history, just over the past year or two, has made it a much safer proposition, and the people in the security industry asked for that. They've gotten it, and they recognize that.
Well, very good. Well, this has been a great discussion. We brought a couple of really neat topics together. It's always fun when you can mix up security and the cloud, because it seems like if you have four people in the room, there will be at least six or seven opinions on how things are going. But we're at the point where I'm afraid we're going to have to wrap things up. And Sarah, I'm going to give you the first opportunity to tell our listeners what they should be on the lookout for from you in the coming week, and what's going to be going on with you at darkreading.com.
Well, next week I'm going to be looking at some Black Hat preview stuff, and the thing I'm going to be looking at is to do with machine learning and neural networks, and that use for security purposes.
Ooh,
and you can find
we'll
me. Yeah, that's where you can find me, looking at that next week. And I know that you're going to ask me how to find me on social networks, so I'm just going to say it's on Twitter at Sarah Peters, no H in Sarah.
Well, Sarah, I appreciate it. Now, I'll remind our readers that if they're not yet following you on Twitter, they need to do so, not only for your insight into the world of security, but also your insight into the world of important things like professional basketball. So need to follow you and keep up with all that. And speaking of professional basketball, we'll turn to our group's native Golden State fans and ask Charlie what he's going to be up to in the coming week.
Well, Kurt, I'd like to take a look at the concept of a digital twin, and I'll be talking to GE about what constitutes a digital twin for something like for an asset, like a jet engine or other big capital asset. And I know GE is working on this concept and developing it, and I think it's one that will be catching on with the rest of the industry before too long. So we'll try to do something on that early next week.
We will look forward to that. And Charlie, if folks want to follow you on social media, what's the best way for them to do that?
That would be at BabcockCW on Twitter.
Well, we will look forward to seeing all that you have there. And again, folks, if you are looking for someone to follow who can really keep you up with everything that's happening in the world of containers and Docker, much of what's happening in the open source world, you need to be following Charlie Babcock. As for me, I'm going to continue to be looking at a lot of DevOps stuff. I have a slideshow coming up over the weekend. And then next week, I'm going to be taking a slightly different tack to some of the pieces I've been writing lately. I've got some case studies on the way, ranging from university CIOs to public safety folks. Lots of good stuff as we explore the way that different IT groups are using all the technology that's out there to create a better environment for their users and their organization. You can keep up with me on Twitter at KG4GWA, and I hope you will do that. Well, for Sarah Peters, Charlie Babcock, and myself, we're grateful that you decided to spend a half hour with us today. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll see you next time.